pawing hands, the hot breath, and the dreadful stench of Grishnak's hairy arms. All this about the orcs of Barad-dûr, Glugbors as they call it, makes me uneasy, said Aragorn. The Dark Lord already knew too much, and his servants also, and Grishnak evidently sent some message across the river after the quarrel. The Red Eye will be looking towards Isengard, but Saruman at any rate is in a cleft stick of his own cutting. Yes, whichever side wins, his outlook is poor, said Merry. Things began to go all wrong for him from the moment his orcs set foot in Rohan.
We caught a glimpse of the old villain, or so Gandalf hints, said Gimli, on the edge of the forest.
When was that? Asked Pippin. 5 nights ago, said Aragorn. Let me see, said Merry. 5 nights ago? Now we come to a part of the story you know nothing about. We met Treebeard that morning after the battle, and that night we were at Welling Hall, one of his Enthouses. The next morning we went to Entmoot, a gathering of Ents, that is, and the queerest thing I've ever seen in my life. It lasted all that day and the next, and we spent the nights with an Ent called Quickbeam. And then late in the afternoon, in the third day of their moot, the Ent suddenly blew up. It was amazing. The forest had felt as tense as if a thunderstorm was brewing inside it. Then all at once it exploded. I wish you could have heard their song as they marched. If Saruman had heard it, he would be 100 miles away by now, even if he had had to run on his own legs, said Pippin. Though Isengard be strong and hard as cold as stone and bare as bone, we go, we go, we go to war to hew the stone and break the door. There was very much more. A great deal of the song had no words and was like a music of horns and drums. It was very exciting. But I thought it was only marching music and no more, just a song, until I got here. I know better now. We came down over the last ridge into Nan Cúrinir, after night had fallen, Merry continued. It was then that I first had the feeling that the forest itself was moving behind us. I thought I was dreaming an Entish dream, but Pippin had noticed it too. We were both frightened, but we didn't find out more about it until later. It was the Huorns, or so the Ents call them in short language. Treebeard won't say much about them, but I think they're Ents that have become almost like trees, at least to look at. They stand here and there in the wood or under its eaves, silent, watching endlessly over the trees, but deep in the darkest dales there are hundreds and hundreds of them, I believe. There's a great power in them, and they seem able to wrap themselves in shadow. It's difficult to see them moving, but they do. They can move very quickly if they're angry. You stand still looking at the weather, maybe, or listening to the rustling of the wind, and then suddenly you find that you're in the middle of a wood with great groping trees all around you. They still have voices and can speak with the Ents. That's why they are called Huorns, Treebeard says, but they have become queer and wild, dangerous. I should be terrified of meeting them if there were no true Ents about to look after them. Well, in the early night we crept down a long ravine into the upper end of the Wizard's Vale, the Ents with all their rustling horns behind them. We couldn't see them, of course, but the whole air was full of creaking. It was very dark, a cloudy night. They moved at a great speed as soon as they'd left the hills and made a noise like a rushing wind. The moon didn't appear through the clouds, and not long after midnight there was a tall wood all round the north side of Isengard. There was no sign of enemies, nor of any challenge. There was a light gleaming from a high window in the tower, that was all. Treebeard and a few more Ents crept on, right round to within sight of the great gates. Pippin and I were with him. We were sitting on Treebeard's shoulders, and I could feel the quivering tenseness in him. But even when they're aroused, Ents can be very cautious and patient. They stood still as carved stones, breathing and listening. Then all at once there was a tremendous stir. Trumpets blared, and the walls of Isengard echoed. We thought that we'd been discovered, and that battle was going to begin. But nothing of the sort. all Saruman's people were marching away. I don't know much about this war, or about the horsemen of Rohan, but Saruman seems to have meant to finish off the king and all his men with one final blow. He emptied Isengard. I saw the enemy go, endless lines of marching orcs, and troops of them mounted on great wolves. And there were battalions of men, too. Many of them carried torches, and in the flare I could see their faces. Most of them were ordinary men, rather tall and dark-haired, and grim but not particularly evil-looking. But there were some others that were horrible, man-high, but with goblin faces, sallow, leering, squint-eyed. Do you know, they reminded me at once of that southerner at Bree, only he was not so obviously orc-like as most of these were.
I thought of him too, said Aragorn. We had many of these half-orcs to deal with at Helm's Deep. It seems plain now that that southerner was a spy of Saruman's, but whether he was working with the Black Riders or for Saruman alone, I don't know. It's difficult with these evil folk to know when they're in league and when they are cheating one another.
Well, of all sorts together, there must have been 10,000 at the very least, said Merry. They took an hour to pass out of the gates. Some went off down the highway to the fords, and some turned away and went eastward. A bridge has been built down there, about a mile away, where the river runs in a very deep channel. You could see it now if you stood up. They were all singing with harsh voices, and laughing, making a hideous din. I thought things looked very black for Rohan, but Treebeard didn't move. He said,
"My business is with Isengard tonight, with rock and stone."
But though I couldn't see what was happening in the dark, I believe that horns began to move south, as soon as the gates were shut again. Their business was with orcs, I think. They were far down the valley in the morning, or at any rate there was a shadow there that one couldn't see through. As soon as Saruman had sent off his army, our turn came. Treebeard put us down, and went up to the gates, and began hammering on the doors, and calling for Saruman. There was no answer, except arrows and stones from the walls. But arrows are no use against Ents. They hurt them, of course, and infuriate them, like stinging flies. But an Ent can be stuck as full of orc arrows as a pincushion, and take no serious harm. They can't be poisoned, for one thing, and their skin seems to be very thick and tougher than bark. It takes a very heavy axe stroke to wound them seriously. They don't like axes. But there would have to be a great many axemen to one Ent. A man that hacks once at an Ent never gets a chance of a second blow. A punch from an Ent fist crumples up iron like thin tin. When Treebeard had got a few arrows in him, he began to warm up, to get positively hasty, as he would say. He let out a great hoom hoom, and a dozen more Ents came striding up. An angry Ent is terrifying. Their fingers and their toes just freeze on to rock, and they tear it up like bread crusts. It was like watching the work of great tree roots in 100 years, all packed into a few moments. They pushed, pulled, tore, shook, and hammered, and clang-bang, crash-crack. In 5 minutes they had these huge gates just lying in ruin, and some were already beginning to eat into the walls like rabbits in a sandpit. I don't know what Saruman thought was happening, but anyway he didn't know how to deal with it. His wizardry may have been falling off lately, of course, but anyway I think he hasn't much grit. Not much plain courage alone in a tight place without a lot of slaves and machines and things, if you know what I mean. Very different from old Gandalf. I wonder if his fame was not all along mainly due to his cleverness in settling at Isengard.
No, said Aragorn. Once he was as great as his fame made him. His knowledge was deep, his thought was subtle, and his hands marvellously skilled, and he had a power over the minds of others. The wise he could persuade, and the smaller folk he could daunt. That power he certainly still keeps. There are not many in Middle-earth that I should say were safe, if they were left alone to talk with him, even now when he has suffered a defeat. Gandalf, Elrond and Galadriel, perhaps, now that his wickedness has been laid bare, but very few others.
The Ents are safe, said Pippin. He seems at one time to have got round them, but never again. And anyway, he didn't understand them, and he made the great mistake of leaving them out of his calculations. He had no plan for them, and there was no time to make any, once they'd set to work. As soon as our attack began, the few remaining rats in Isengard started bolting through every hole that the Ents made. The Ents let the men go, after they'd questioned them, 2 or 3 dozen only, down at this end. I don't think many orc folk of any size escaped. Not from the Horns. There was a wood full of them all around Isengard by that time, as well as those that had gone down the valley. When the Ents had reduced a large part of the southern walls to rubbish, and what was left of his people had bolted and deserted him, Saruman fled in panic. He seems to have been at the gates when we arrived. I expect he came to watch his splendid army march out. When the Ents broke their way in, he left in a hurry. They didn't spot him at first, but the night had opened out, and there was a great light of stars, quite enough for Ents to see by, and suddenly Quickbeam gave a cry.
The Tree Killer! The Tree Killer!
Quickbeam is a gentle creature, but he hates Saruman all the more fiercely for that. His people suffered cruelly from orc axes. He leapt down the path from the inner gate, and he can move like a wind when he's roused. There was a pale figure hurrying away in and out of the shadows of the pillar, and it had nearly reached the stairs to the tower top. But it was a near thing. Quickbeam was so hot after him that he was within a step or two of being caught and strangled when he slipped in through the door. When Saruman was safe back in Orthonk, it wasn't long before he set some of his precious machinery to work. By that time there were many Ents inside Isengard. Some had followed Quickbeam, and others had burst in from the north and east. They were roaming about and doing a great deal of damage. Suddenly up came fires and foul fumes. The vents and shafts all over the plain began to spout and belch. Several of the Ents got scorched and blistered. One of them, Beachbone, I think he was called, a very tall, handsome Ent, got caught in a spray of some liquid fire and burned like a torch, a horrible sight. That sent them mad. I thought that they'd been really roused before, but I was wrong. I saw what it was like at last. It was staggering. They roared and boomed and trumpeted until stones began to crack and fall at the mere noise of them. Mary and I lay on the ground and stuffed our cloaks into our ears. Round and round the rock of Orthonk, the Ents went striding and storming like a howling gale, breaking pillars, hurling avalanches of boulders down the shafts, tossing up huge slabs of stone into the air like leaves. The tower was in the middle of a spinning whirlwind. I saw iron posts and blocks of masonry go rocketing up hundreds of feet and smash against the windows of Orthanc. But Treebeard kept his head. He hadn't got any burns, luckily. He didn't want his folk to hurt themselves in their fury, and he didn't want Saruman to escape out of some hole in the confusion. Many of the Ents were hurling themselves against the Orthanc rock, but that defeated them. It's very smooth and hard. Some wizardry is in it, perhaps, older and stronger than Saruman's. Anyway, they couldn't get a grip on it, or make a crack in it, and they were bruising and wounding themselves against it. So Treebeard went out into the ring and shouted. His enormous voice rose above all the din. There was a dead silence, suddenly. In it we heard a shrill laugh from a high window in the tower. That had a queer effect on the Ents. They'd been boiling over. Now they became cold, grim as ice, and quiet. They left the plain and gathered round Treebeard, standing quite still. He spoke to them for a little in their own language. I think he was telling them of a plan he had made in his old head long before. Then they just faded silently away in the grey light. Day was dawning by that time. They set a watch on the tower, I believe, but the watchers were so well hidden in shadows and kept so still that I couldn't see them. The others went away north. All that day they were busy, out of sight. Most of the time we were left alone. It was a dreary day, and we wandered about a bit, though we kept out of the view of the windows of Orthonk as much as we could. They stared at us so threateningly. A good deal of the time we spent looking for something to eat. And also we sat and talked, wondering what was happening away south in Rowan, and what had become of all the rest of our company. Every now and then we could hear in the distance the rattle and fall of stone and thudding noises echoing in the hills. In the afternoon we walked round the circle and went to have a look at what was going on. There was a great shadowy wood of Huorns at the head of the valley, and another round the northern wall. We didn't dare to go in, but there was a rending, tearing noise of work going on inside. Ents and Huorns were digging great pits and trenches, and making great pools and dams, gathering all the waters of the Eisen and every other spring and stream that they could find. We left them to it. At dusk, Treebeard came back to the gate. He was humming and booming to himself, and he seemed pleased. He stood and stretched his great arms and legs and breathed deep. I asked him if he was tired.
"Tired?" he said. "Tired? Well, no, not tired, but stiff. I need a good draught of Entwash. We've worked hard. We've done more stone-cracking and earth-gnawing today than we've done in many a long year before. But it's nearly finished. When night falls, don't linger near this gate or in the old tunnel. Water may come through, and it'll be foul water for a while, until all the filth of Saruman has washed away. Then Eisen can run clean again."
He began to pull down a bit more of the walls, in a leisurely sort of way, just to amuse himself. We were just wondering where it would be safe to lie and get some sleep, when the most amazing thing of all happened. There was the sound of a rider coming swiftly up the road. Mary and I lay quiet, and Treebeard hid himself in the shadows under the arch. Suddenly a great horse came striding up like a flash of silver. It was already dark, but I could see the rider's face clearly. It seemed to shine, and all his clothes were white. I just sat up staring with my mouth open. I tried to call out and couldn't. There was no need. He halted just by us and looked down at us. "Gandalf," I said at last, but my voice was only a whisper.
Did he say,
"Hello, Pippin, this is a pleasant surprise."
"No, indeed," he said.
"Get up, you tomfool of a took. Where in the name of wonder, in all this ruin, is Treebeard? I want him, quick."
Treebeard heard his voice and came out of the shadows at once, and there was a strange meeting. I was surprised, because neither of them seemed surprised at all. Gandalf obviously expected to find Treebeard here, and Treebeard might almost have been loitering about near the gates on purpose to meet him. Yet we'd told the old Ent all about Moria. But then I remembered a queer look he gave us at the time. I can only suppose that he'd seen Gandalf or had some news of him, but wouldn't say anything in a hurry.
"Don't be hasty," is his motto, but nobody, not even elves, will say much about Gandalf's movements when he's not there.
"Home, Gandalf," said Treebeard. "I'm glad you've come. Wood and water, stock and stone, I can master, but there is a wizard to manage here."
"Treebeard," said Gandalf, "I need your help. You've done much, but I need more. I have about 10,000 orcs to manage."
Then those two went off and had a council together in some corner. It must have seemed very hasty to Treebeard, for Gandalf was in a tremendous hurry and was already talking at a great pace before they passed out of hearing. They were only away a matter of minutes, perhaps a quarter of an hour. Then Gandalf came back to us, and he seemed relieved, almost merry. He did say he was glad to see us then. "But Gandalf," I cried, "where have you been? And have you seen the others?"
"Wherever I have been, I am back," he answered in the genuine Gandalf manner. "Yes, I've seen some of the riders, but news must wait. This is a perilous night, and I must ride fast. But the dawn may be brighter, and if so,